Welcome to the Wisdom of Bad Movies. This will be the last My Favorite Moment of season one. And I'm joined by my good friend and producer, Rashad. He's here. Say what's up, Rashad. Say everybody.
Yo, good evening.
He's here. Gonna do? This is what it is. This is really gonna be something different. We are a movie, but from one movie per year in an entire decade of film. And I thought it would be good to start with the 70s because that really introduced, well, really the late 60s introduced it, but the 70s was the period of the new wave in Hollywood, the new auteur wave in Hollywood, in American film. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have a choice between the 70s, 80s, 90s, the early 2000s in film, our favorite moment from that decade. So we're going to be discussing a favorite moment from a good movie from one of the decades or for the decade that we either one of us ends up choosing. Todd is deathly afraid of getting to the 70s because he does not he doesn't like that decade. So we're gonna see. All right, here we go. Looking now. And it is damn Rashad. We're gonna be discussing our favorite moment from a movie in the 70s. And it's gonna be some fun, man. This is great. This is fun, Rashad. Buck up, man. This is great. Rashad, what's up, man? How's it going?
I'm good. I'm just ready to talk about my favorite movie of the 70s.
The way this is going to work is we're going to take 10 movies from 1970 to 1979, our favorite movie from a year in the 70s from each year, and our favorite moment from that favorite movie from that year in the 70s. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm actually really excited. I don't know how do you feel, Rashad, about
Not too excited.
it?
I'm not getting through the decade. I'm just letting you know right now.
What is it again, Rashad? Because you said tell the people what you were saying about the 70s. You said that you don't like the 70s for real.
Yeah, not my favorite decade for movies. For music.
For music though, okay.
Not movies. You know what I'm saying?
Since I won the coin toss, you can go ahead and go first with yours. And so we'll alternate. You go first for each year, and I'll just go second, okay? Since I did win the coin toss. Is that
Cool.
fair?
I mean,
It is fair.
yeah, it can be fair. I mean,
So you go first. You go first, and I'll go second for each year. Because I honestly think, you know what I'm looking forward to though is to see if we pick the same movie for the same year. I honestly think that for at least one of these years, we're gonna pick the same movie. I have a feeling it's gonna be one.
1970, I'll be honest, like I don't have a movie for
You don't
1970.
have one?
I don't.
Oh my God,
Like
people, are you hearing this?
the movies that came out in the 70s that like I looked through the list, didn't watch none of them. So I'm just gonna be super honest. Like I'm not gonna sit here and lie to you. So oh yeah, I saw the forbidden photos of a lady above suspicion. I'm lying. I never seen
Oh
that.
man.
You know what I'm saying? Like, or like, I've never seen When Dinosaurs Rule the Earth. Like, who's watching that crap?
Oh
Nobody.
my God.
You know what I'm saying? The Vampire Lovers. I'm not watching that.
So you're saying, just for everybody's clarification, for the year 1970,
I
you
have
haven't
no
seen any of
movie.
those. None of
Nope.
those. Okay.
No. I
All right.
think I've seen some of Airport before, but I don't remember. Like, I never even seen Tora, Tora, Tora. Never.
All right, so well, I'll jump in. So look, 1970, my favorite film of that year. Patton was a good movie.
Right.
If you've seen that, and if I'm not mistaken, Francis Ford Coppola, who definitely will come up again for me for this decade because he was like the man of the 70s as a director in the American New Wave. But I think he wrote the script for Patton. But Patton isn't my, it's not my favorite pick. I just think it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, please go and see that. George C. Scott is brilliant and it's crazy. But my pick for 1970 actually is this movie called Little Big Man with Dustin Hoffman. If you have not seen this movie is so great. I saw it when I was a teenager. And it's one of those movies that sticks with you, man. It's a story of this white young man who is coming of age in the 1800s, and he lives to be over 100 years old, well over 100 years old.
Oh, okay.
And he is almost like the original Forrest Gump, Rashad. It's like, because he goes through so
Oh.
many different historical events in the 1800s. He goes from living
in the prairie to living among the Lakota Sioux tribe.
He's a white guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's white. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He plays white. Yeah. To becoming an honorary member of the Lakota Sioux, to witnessing the events of Little Bighorn with General Custer. He witnesses all that stuff. And it's really a great coming of age tale, man. But my favorite scene in that is when his father, who's the chief of his Lakota tribe, he kind of strays away from what they call the people. That's what the Native American tribe in the film refers to themselves as, the people. And he strays away from the people. And somehow or another, because it's like he just kind of keeps re-encountering this indigenous tribe.
Yeah.
He meets up with the chief again, and the chief is basically at the end of his life. They've been driven off their land, and by this time, you know, the white Americans have basically pushed this particular tribe away from their native or ancestral home. And the chief is, he's in this kind of mode of kind of invocation, if you will. And it's like he has a staff in his hand and he's standing in the distance, and Dustin Hoffman's character joins him and he looks towards the sky because he's praying for rain. And he says, I thank you for my failures and I thank you for my successes. And it's something about that that just registers with me that I've never forgotten. This idea of how it is important to have this kind of posture. It doesn't matter what religion you subscribe to, what theology you have, but it is important to have a posture of thanksgiving, man, and gratefulness and gratitude. This man says, as an old man, looking back over his life, I thank you for my son who's come back to me. He says, I thank you for my successes, and I thank you for my failures. And that's a beautiful lesson, man. I just, whenever I think about that film, I always think about that scene, man. It's just, it's really gripping. It's a great film. If you haven't seen it, again, Little Big Man, Dustin Hoffman, 1970, a great film that I don't think is discussed nearly enough. I think it might be on HBO Max right now, I think it is. But it's a great, it's on HBO Max. But it's a great Arthur Penn movie. Arthur Penn, who was the father of Sean Penn, of course. A great American movie. So check it out. They have pretty good indigenous representation in it too. Not too much white face. I mean, or I should say brown face in it. So it's pretty good, man. I mean, it's for its time, but it's a gripping film. So go watch it. Good stuff.
Cool.
So go ahead, Rashad. 1971, man. What you got?
All right, 71. I actually have a movie this time. 1971, my favorite movie is probably something you're going to see quite a few times on this list, and that is your boy, James Bond, and that is Diamonds Are Forever. It's a quick aside. I love James Bond. I don't even understand really why. But yeah, super problematic films in retrospect, but but yo, like, it's probably because like they always showed them like on TBS and then like Christmas time, and I just sit there and watch James Bond movies. But yeah, Diamonds Are Forever, one of my favorite movies, definitely one of the best soundtracks, you know, of even used by one Kanye West, and with this song with Jay-Z with The Rock. Anyway, but yeah, best scene in that movie is going to be the Vegas car chase scene, because at that time you had car chase scenes, you had bullet and all that stuff, but like having a car chase in downtown Vegas, and it's a James Bond movie, that means he had to go to America to do this, was sort of unprecedented. So like for me as a kid watching, I was like, yo, like they actually in a real legit city. That's crazy. So yeah, that's my favorite scene.
I love that, man. That's great, man. That's, you know, let me tell you the honest truth, man. That's the only James Bond film I have not seen.
Really?
It's the only, let me see if I can get this right. Hold on, let me see if I can get this. No, I'm lying. Because no, I'm thinking about Never Say Never Again. I haven't seen that one.
Seen that one too.
But Never Say Never Again was it wasn't an Eon production. It wasn't an official James Bond film. So it was 1983. It wasn't actually in the canon. So I didn't see it because I'm such a purist when it comes to James Bond, because I love James Bond films as well. But Diamonds Are Forever, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. But you know what though? It's funny that you said that your favorite scene in that is a car chase, because I'm gonna spot you there. I'm gonna say Diamonds Are Forever has a great car chase scene. But I'm gonna raise you The French Connection, which also came out in
1971. Sure, I've seen The French Connection.
Okay, yeah, William Friedkin, the great American director who directed The Exorcist in 73, probably the best film of the 70s. It might be. People don't think that because it's a horror movie. I know grown adults right now who have not seen The Exorcist, who are afraid to watch it, even to this day. But anyway, The French Connection, if you haven't seen it, go check it out. The car chase scene in that, I'm not, it's not a competition, Rashad, but I gotta tell you, man. And I want the people at home to judge for yourself. Go ahead, go while you're home. I want you to watch the car chase scene in The French Connection. And I want you to watch the car chase scene in Diamonds Forever. And you tell me which one is better. Cause this man, Popeye Doyle, played by Gene Hackman, is in a car chase in the middle of New York traffic. And Rashad, you from New York. So you already know how it is.
Crazy.
And somehow or another, forget the fact that the stunts are just ridiculous. This is a practical stunt. This is no CG in this. The fact that they were able to get these shots, these, I guess you would call them dolly shots. I mean, this is before Steadicam. Steadicam wasn't invented until 1980, so by Garrett Brown. So we're talking about even before then, and the shots they get in this are just fantastic. And how the car chase scene is not just a car chase scene, you know, just for the sake of having a chase scene, like it actually has something to do with the plot. This is a high intensity, very Verismo realistic film. When I was watching it again, I was like, man, this film is like really gritty. Like this is like some, like this is not child's play at all, man. I mean, this is a real R-rated 70s film, man. But the chase scene in this is right up there with Diamonds Are Forever, right up there with Ronin, if you've ever seen Ronin before, with De Niro. Great car chase scene in that. But anyway, so that's my favorite moment in The French Connection, which is one of the, to this day, probably one of the most realistic films as far as how it's shot, how it shows, or how it reveals New York, New York's crime scene in the early 70s, New York's underbelly. It's a great, great film. Great moment, too.
Yeah.
So, what you got for 72, Rashad?
I mean, 72 is a couple of movies that I actually saw out this list. I've seen most of The Godfather. I've seen both Bruce Lee flicks, I'm sorry. Seen Chinese Connection, a couple of the joints. Like, to be honest, the one I would have to pick would probably be Return of the Dragon.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? That's a good movie. Chuck Norris was in it, which is like,
yeah, really, of course, yeah,
really,
man.
Funny,
yeah.
In retrospect, seeing how Chuck Norris's career, you know, has gained such, like, you know, relevancy,
mythic proportion.
Like,
mythic.
I don't even understand. Yeah. Like, he, yeah, it's crazy. So, I'm probably gonna say the scene for me. It's probably the scene when he, like, when I first came, again, seen this as a kid, first using the nunchucks, you know what I'm saying? Like, because for me, that's like, it was so like, one, what is this weapon? Two, why is this weapon? It seemed like the most irrelevant weapon ever. But the way that he was just like maneuvering, I was like, oh man, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. And he really crushed everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, the thing I love about Bruce Lee, it was, everything was so effortlessly. Even when he was like using full effort, it was like, and now as an adult, like knowing that a lot of it is basically just kayfabe, was like, yo, like it's amazing how he was acting and still being a martial artist and still a martial artist in real life. Like he was combining all those things together. And yeah,
First, and choreographing his own scenes.
That's what I'm
saying. I mean,
he died way too early, yo.
Yeah, I mean, also for me too is like when you think about how he just used his body. Like he's not a very talky actor. Like they didn't give him that many lines.
No, a lot of facial expressions.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, yeah. He reminds me of Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt reminds me of Bruce Lee in that way. It's like how it's like really more about the body, about hand gestures, stuff like that, man. I mean, yeah, man, that's a great one. Man, you took me back with that one too, man. I remember when I was in eighth grade, I went to Movie Time, the video store on Airline Boulevard in Portsmouth, and I checked that out. I checked it out and watched that, man. That's wild, man. Yeah, shout out Bruce Lee, man. You know what I'm saying? For me, 1972, I got to go with The Godfather. 1972 was a great year in film. But before I start, I just want to say it was a hard choice because Sounder came out that year too. And that's a good movie. Sounder with Paul Winfield and Sidney Tyson.
Yo, man,
but look, like, but let me tell you, yeah, because
Paul Winfield. School, yo.
Yeah.
It killed that but, dog, I mean, yo.
But my favorite moment in that film though, man, was that scene when Sidney Tyson brings him the cake in jail, when he in jail, and the way that cake looked. It just looks so delicious. I just was like, no, I'm serious. Some of y'all will listen to this and think this is a joke. I'm like serious. Like, I still think about that cake every now and then. And I haven't seen this movie in years, but that cake, and I was like, man, that cake. Go back and watch Sounder and look how delicious that cake looks. It's the best looking chocolate cake you've ever seen in your life. If you say otherwise, you're lying. But also, I told one of my students that, that Paul Winfield was gay, and she could not believe me. She did not believe that he was gay. I said, yeah, he was gay. You know, not that it matters, but she just really was like calling me a liar to my face, and I was just like, no, he really wasn't gay.
What else was he in? He was in
You know what movie he was in? He was great in. He was in Presumed Innocent, the Pacula movie, with Harrison Ford. He played a judge, a judge who had a little thing with this lawyer. And yeah, he was great in that. Crap, he was good. But yeah, he was in that. He played Dr. King too. And
that's what.
But if you want,
he was also in another black film too. Like I can't remember what. Oh my God, who did he play? Never mind. Just go with your movie. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, no, but yeah. I mean, if you want to prove that Paul Winfield was gay, go watch Luther Vandross on YouTube, live version of House Is Not a Home. At the NAACP Awards, and look at Paul Winfield staring at him in the audience. He got him on under pressure. He's like, he's about to run on stage because Luther is singing that. Anyway, but no, but seriously. But go watch that. Yeah. Anyway, but 1972, though, Godfather is my favorite movie, favorite moment of in that movie is when Sonny is killed. He's assassinated. He's murdered. As payback for him hitting Bruno Tattaglia. And when they kill Sonny, oh, also rest in peace to James Caan, who just died this year. Who played Sonny? Just died a few weeks ago. But when they bring the body of Sonny into the funeral parlor. In the basement, and the Godfather Vito goes to meet Bonacera, the Undertaker, because he owes him a favor from the beginning of the film. And the great part about this scene is when you look at Marlon Brando's acting and how he says, look how they massacred my boy, right? And everybody always talks about that. But what always gets me about that scene is how the actor playing Bonacera, how when he looks at the body of Sonny, how Coppola doesn't show us his body. We don't see the bullet holes, the multifarious bullet holes all across his body. We don't see the gore. We don't see the garishness, right? We just see the reaction of Vito and mainly the reaction of Bonacera. Now, mind you, he's an Undertaker. And the horror on this man's face when he sees Sonny's body, that's what makes that scene, y'all. Like, Marlon Brando, the greatest actor, you know, most influential actor in film history, so forth and so on, you know, you could debate that. But Bonacera, the way he look, go back and watch the movie, when he, the way he looks at the body in today's film, in the, you know, in modern day, they would have shown the body, they would have shown it, you know, all the blood and stuff like that, right? But back then, the subtlety of them not showing his body, of just showing the reaction of the Undertaker, this man who's seen body after body after body come in there, the fact that he's horrified, that lets the audience know, okay, yeah, this is some other kind of gore that we're witnessing. This is a very harrowing moment right here.
Yeah.
So that's my favorite moment in that film.
Cool. 73.
Yeah.
I got a movie, yo.
Okay, go ahead, yeah.
And again, it's bomb, man. Like it's Live and Let Die.
Oh man. Mr. Big.
Yeah, yo. Like yeah. Daughter Kanaga and all that. So to be honest, it's really split between two scenes. Like one I know vividly in my mind. The other one is like I feel like it's an amalgamation of things. So the scene that's like I laugh every time I see it is the scene where they are being chased on boat when they're in Louisiana, about like most towards the end of the movie, and it's the sheriff. You know what I'm saying? It's the sheriff dude that actually pops up in another James Bond movie while he's like in like Thailand or something stupid like that. That same white dude, like he's just the stereotypical Louisiana white guy, and it's hilarious. It was always been hilarious to me, so that's funny. But the scene that really gets me is in the beginning when he's on, I think he's in like the Caribbean or whatever, and then he like actually meets like the witch doctor.
Mm.
Like for me, it was like yo, this is like I thought this was James Bond. Like this is kind of scary. You know what I'm saying? Like it just was on some other stuff when I was like watching it at like 7. You know what I'm saying? I'm expecting to see cool white James Bond get some girl. Now I'm seeing it's like black people and they perform some sort of like ritualistic ceremony. You know what I'm saying? I was like, oh man, this is different. So after that, I was like, I was hooked. So I was like, oh man, this is about to be about some black people. So like, even though in my heart at 7, I knew the black people were the bad people, but it still was good to see us in the film like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I mean, that was a pretty good role too, man, for, hold on, my dog is barking. Hold on, you can cut this out. What's wrong, Blue? What's wrong? Or you can keep it in. If everybody listening, my dog is here. She is not like thunderstorm. It's thundering and storm right now.
It is
storm. And she's doing the most. What's wrong? You want to go outside in the rain? What do you want to do? Please go. You want to go outside, right? Well, she wanted to go out there. I think she has to use the bathroom, but okay. All right, there you go. Anyway, no, that's cool, man, because, yeah, man, because that starts, it's a scene, a lot of it's in Harlem, right?
Yeah, they go from, like, the Caribbeans to Harlem to, like, Louisiana.
Yeah,
they do a lot of, this is mainly, like, you know, U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. For me, 73, man, I had a tough time with this one, too, because 73 Mean Streets came out. Scorsese's first major, I mean, you know, Alice Doesn't Live Here. That's a good one, but this one was the one that really put him on the map with him and De Niro in it. But this one right here, man, I was like, man, do I want to do Mean Streets or do I want to do something else? Because this is the one, I mean, like I said, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. That was a good one, but this Mean Streets was Scorsese, man, in the way we think of him today, I think. But also, 73, Serpico came out, and that one for me is like, I love that movie, man. Serpico is just to see his wrestling with the descent. That he's, because when you watch Serpico, like you're watching a descent. This man is really going deeper and deeper. He starts off starry-eyed and bushy-tailed, but by the end of the film, he is just cynical and a bit jaded. But I think for me, American Graffiti by George Lucas probably is my favorite film of that year. My favorite moment in it is when just the shot of all of the cars, when we see all of the youth in their cars driving down the boulevard. It's something about that just resonates with me. Whenever I think about that film, which I didn't even realize that some people really don't like that movie because it's one of my favorite movies ever, but I really like that movie. And but it's just something about just watching this kind of twilight of youth. The film, they're riding around mostly at night, and it's kind of like that twilight of youth, because after the events of the film are unfolded, everybody's gone. They're either gone to the army, they're gone to college. This was the last summer that they will actually be young again, and it's just you can kind of get that sense just watching the cars kind of just go by and back and forth and having them in the cars there and just having that kind of that image. And so that's my favorite scene from that movie. If you haven't seen American Graffiti, you should check it out. It's really good, especially if you like cars.
Yeah, definitely. Haven't seen it. 74. Let's just keep this thing going. I'm gonna be super honest. A lot of movies came out this year. A movie called Coonskin. I'm sure you see that, saw that one before. Arabian Nights. Uptown Saturday Night. You know what I'm saying? Great Gatsby, OG version, I guess. Flash Gordon. A lot of movies came out. And I'm gonna be super honest, man. Like the one I keep going back to is gonna be James Bond. I'm saying I'm not gonna sit here and lie. It's the man with the golden gun. You know what I'm saying? So definitely one of my favorite Bonds and picking the scene now.
Christopher Lee is in it. Roger Moore. Roger
Yeah,
Moore.
and I love Roger Moore's 007. Like people be hating on Roger Moore. Yeah, Roger Moore was He just was so much more to me. Like he was like,
He was fun.
yeah, he was fun,
Fun
and
with us,
like I felt like he was more like physically imposing than Sean Connery. Like Sean
Roger Moore,
Connery,
for real?
yeah, like for me he was like Sean Connery like seemed like even more of a pretty boy, you know what I'm saying? To me, but yeah, that like the man with the golden gun. Let me I'm trying to remember my favorite part of that, but yeah, go ahead with yours. I can remember mine. I come back on the
Oh,
backside.
okay. Now, for me, 1974, I was really thinking about Chinatown. To me, Chinatown probably is the best movie of 74. It's a great film. It just is. I mean, Polanski is problematic, but the movie
As
is,
hell.
that nigga ain't come back to America no time soon.
Ever again.
But it's a great film, but. And the score too, Jerry Goldsmith, Jesus, oh my God. If you want to listen to a beautiful film score, turn on that Chinatown soundtrack. My God. But for me, 74 is Godfather Part Two. That one is just the scene that gets me the most is very familiar when you if you've ever seen it before. When Vito was young, because if you watch the movie, you know it's flashing back and forth between the present day and the past when the Godfather Vito Corleone comes to America at the turn of the 20th century. And when he is coming of age, he's a young man, he has his friend Genko. And they go to a little opera house in Little Italy, in New York, and there they meet Don Fanucci, the Black Hand, and he's like the neighborhood boss, neighborhood mafioso, and he threatens to kill this young girl that that Genko's into, this young lady that he wants to be with. He threatens to kill her if her father doesn't pay him some money. And Vito, he almost he looks like he's about to intervene. And Genko's like, nah, come on, let's leave, let's go. And when they're in the back alley going back home after leaving, this is the greatest part in this movie to me. It's really like an apotheosis moment. It's like Vito asks, because Vito just got there. You know, he's not from New York. He got there later than anybody else that he knows. And he says, if he's Italian, why is he bothering other Italians? And it's like, for me, that speaks like so profoundly to how we should be as a kind of culture. You know, whoever you are, whatever culture you're from, there was a time that people didn't relate to each other in terms of race, but in terms of culture. And when he says that if he's Italian, why is he harassing or bothering? Why is he oppressing other Italians? And later on in the film, we know that Vito ends up killing him in a very brutal way. It's like a really that movie's really violent. But he really kills him in a very brutal way. But I'm not saying, again, listen to this podcast, I am not advocating for murder. But what I think that the murder represents, if we look at it, I think somewhat subtextually, is that if you don't have the best interests of your people in mind, what good are you? Like, why are you even alive? You know, I think that's the relevant question that comes out of that scene. It's like, yo, this man was out here oppressing his own people. Like, why are you doing that? And Vito, he asked that very relevant question to Genko. And Genko is, he really represents a kind of status quo cynicism. Like, he's just basically just thinking, like, it's kind of a priori. This is the way things have always been. This is the way things are here, Vito. You're new here. You don't really know. But he's like, no, he's Italian. Why is he bothering other Italians? Why is he doing this? Why is he exploiting his own people? And that scene right there has always been very powerful to me, very meaningful.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Godfather's it's I like how they it was written in a way that it was so like very much like indicative of the times and also just like it encapsulates a culture and a people like the Italian Americans and the Italians coming over like and they're how they got along and didn't get along. So yeah, that's so that whole like, you know, what it means to be an American, you know what I'm saying? Or what it means to be culturally whoever your people are, like it's that's a really that's a very timely conversation right now. My favorite scene in The Man with the Golden Gun has got to be when he's at the I guess like a Muay Thai fight or something. And they're sitting down, he's talking to the girl, you know, because that's Bomb, he's talking to the girls. And he's talking, and we see people chatting in the background, dudes on the walkie-talkie. Then, bam, girls get shot right in the middle of the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, your boy, Christopher Lee, you know what I'm saying? Okay, Count Dooku comes beside us, like, yeah, man, you know, yada, yada, yada. No, forget the girl, she's replaceable. Like, dang, just cold-blooded. Probably one of the best Bomb, most un definitely most underrated Bomb villain. You know what I'm saying? He did a good job with that one. 1975. I do have a movie, so
Go ahead, man. Not here.
and this movie scared the hell out of me as a kid, and that is none other than Jaws. And the best scene in that movie is the get out of water scene. When your boy Richard Dreyfuss is sitting on the beach and he's just like purveying the water. You know what I'm saying? And there's this built up tension over about a 2 minute span. Cause you know, like, yo, people have been dying in the water. That's one. All right. You know it's a shark, two. People still going to the beach though, because people say, hey man, it's the summertime. We gotta get out, you know what I'm saying? Gotta make our
We have
money.
stupid bear
Yeah, so
who
there's
cares
that
about money.
whole
Yeah, hate him.
again. It's the whole propaganda type thing. You know what I'm saying? Again, another relevant term to use nowadays. So there's that whole thing going on, right? And then you have what? People talking to him. He's trying to out of water. And then you see that little kid go down. Bruh, like, Like, get your boy, man. Like, he's about to die. And he does die. And Richard Dreyfuss won't even, like, in this, and the funny thing is, like, he won't even step foot in the water. You know what I'm saying? He won't even go in the water. He just is right at the edge. Like, nah, I'm about to go in there and die too. You know what I'm saying? So he that scene right there for me, best scene in the movie.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, Steven Spielberg, man, Jaws. They called it the original blockbuster.
Yes.
Which may or may not be true.
I mean, you know.
E.W. Griffith's The Birth of a Nation, 1917? That might have been that was the blockbuster, man. People don't talk.
I can't believe they showed a joint in the White House. Like, this is it, right?
I can believe it. Woodrow Wilson, man, was racist, man. He was the president of Princeton. He was a professor, but he was a racist, man. Man, like,
yeah, most of them were, but that's another topic.
Yeah, but Wilson was a Virginia boy. He was from Virginia. So
the VA boys, you know.
Yeah, you already know. Back then, my God, even now. But anyway, 1975 for me, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That Milos Forman is one of my favorite directors. If you haven't seen Amadeus, 1984 film about Mozart, that's a great movie. He also directed The People versus Larry Flint. I think that came out in 96. So Milos Forman's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was also produced by Michael Douglas, by the way. I think he was like 30 years old when he produced that. Yeah.
Wow,
yeah. And then he won the Academy Award for Best Picture at like 30 years old, 31 years old. So legendary stuff, man. Jack Nicholson's in it, of course. But if you haven't seen it, my favorite film, actually my favorite moment in the film, is at the end. Of course, you know, it's about Jack Nicholson's character, who is in an insane asylum, even though he's not insane. He is in there because he had been involved in some petty criminal activities, and I think he pleaded insanity, but he wasn't insane. So they actually had him in there with the inimitable and horrifying Nurse Ratched. And they ended up at the end of the film, you know, spoilers, I mean, you haven't seen it. I mean, good Lord, 1975. But he ends up getting lobotomized. And they take that frontal lobe out, and he's no longer the same. He is not irrepressible anymore. He's not dynamic anymore. He's not intelligent anymore. He's not witty. He's not charismatic. He's not himself anymore. He's still alive, but he's not himself. And when Chief, who is one of the characters who was in the insane asylum, this giant indigenous man, who's in there, when he's silent. That's his whole deal, is that he's silent. He doesn't speak the whole film. And he almost acts like he doesn't really know what's going on, even though we can tell by his eyes that he really has some kind of insight. When he sees the fact that Jack Nicholson's character has been lobotomized, he's lying in the bed there, in the middle of the night, he comes, well, I should say, in the wee hours of the morning, he comes, and he takes that pillow, and he suffocates him to death. He suffocates him, and he kills him. In a beautiful scene. This scene right here is one of the few scenes, probably the only scene in movie history that has actually brought me to tears. This scene right here. And it's just something about the fact that Chief saw his friend no longer himself, and rather to see him be less of himself, he would rather take his life. It's something about that. And then after he kills him, he picks up the water fountain and he crashes it through the window. And the chief, he runs away out the insane asylum into the rising sun. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful shot, a beautiful moment. But it's something about that, about the fact that he did not want to see his friend be less of who he was. to be a shadow or a shell of himself, and he basically freed him. And I think that's what he was thinking about. And then we see Jack Nicholson's character actually start to fight. He fights it. He doesn't want to be killed. He doesn't want to be smothered or suffocated, even though he has been lobotomized. He had enough of himself there to try to fight Chief killing him. It still happens. And it's still beautiful. Have you seen it, Rashad, before?
No.
No. Oh, it's great. Oh my God.
Yeah, like my that's a movie that like my dad talks about a lot. I think he liked that one a lot.
Yeah. Go
yeah.
see it.
Yeah, doubt it. 1976. Again, I'm doing much better in the latter years than the earlier years. Do have a favorite movie from 76. And that movie is it's Rocky. And Rocky for me as a kid, like my favorite scenes, of course, was him, you know, him fighting and all that good stuff, him coming up into the ranks. But I actually saw this movie a couple of years ago, like pretty recently. And the scene that's most memorable for me, and my favorite scene in this movie is the conversation with Rocky and Paulie. So this is when Rocky and when Paulie says, hey, okay, this is Rocky, right? Rocky is basically like, I don't know, he's like the strong arm for a number runner or something. Like some sort of shady business going on. And he's like, you know, breaking necks and taking checks, so to speak. And Paulie, who's doing whatever job he's doing, is like, yo, like, how can I be down? How can I get down? You know what I'm saying? Because he's trying to make more money too. And the crazy thing is, Paulie is willing to sell out his sister to Rocky just to be down. You know what I'm saying? Because he knows he likes his sister. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, you like Adrian? Oh, yeah, I can go with Adrian. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, in the maturation of their relationship is basically because he wants to be in Rocky's position in order to make more money. So that, and I think a lot of people forget that when it comes to the latter movies, you know what I'm saying? We see Paulie become a drunk and he's belligerent, but he still has Rock's back. I just want to mess with my sister. He's like the drunk uncle that they're dragging along. But the onset of this is him selling out his sister, just wanting to be down in order to make some more money. And it's sad. Yeah. It's like, damn, you really gonna dime out your, you're really gonna basically pimp out your sister on the hopes to be able to do what Rocky does. And knowing he can't, because Paul is short, fat, out of shape. He's not being nobody's muscle. You know what I'm saying? So like, it doesn't, him even wanting to do that does not make logical sense. But Rocky, but Paulie's so desperate, he does that anyway. Mm-hmm. And then we have the most awkward beginnings of a love story, you know what I'm saying, between Rocky and Adrian. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's on, is like, if looking at it today, that would never fly. Like, yo, the way it's super weird now watching it. You know what I'm saying? But like that scene right there, yeah, that's the scene for me.
Yeah, a lot of films like that, man. A lot of films like that. It wouldn't fly today. Didn't do some. You know, Animal House came out in 78. I'll wait till we get there, but that movie probably wouldn't work today. But 76, man, Network is my favorite film from that year. If you haven't seen Network, you seen Network, Rashad?
No, I've seen The Network.
Oh my God. Bro, listen, people. In the sound of my voice, under the sound of my voice. Let me sound like a preacher now.
I know you got real Baptist with you. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, yeah. If you have not seen Network by Sidney Lumet, written by the late great Paddy Chayefsky, who also wrote the script for Marty, 1955. You have to see Network. It is an analysis of media, of multimedia, and it's deleterious, destructive effect on society at large.
I mean, I'm looking at the synopsis, and it's basically what media is today.
Yeah. when you watch it, it is so prescient. It is so We'll say it's almost, it's just really foreboding. It predicted a lot of what we see today. Just how the nature of television itself, even though television isn't as big as it was back in the 70s, but we have different forms of television today with our smartphones and different streaming services and apparatuses and so forth and so on. But I can't go into the whole synopsis, we don't have time, but my favorite moment from that film is when you have this character, this black character, one of the few black characters in the film, Lorraine Hobbs, who is this kind of left-wing communist. She refers to herself as a commie nigga. And she's probably, all the characters are so articulate and well-spoken and intelligent in the film, but she's probably the most intelligent person in the film. She has an afro, she has all these things. She's totally militant, Rashad. She's a true communist. She does not believe in private property. She does not believe in excess materialism, consumerism. She doesn't believe in any of that stuff, right? But by the end of the movie, Rashad, this woman is arguing with her peers over her market share for her own television program. She has been totally corrupted by the multimedia apparatus that is television. And we see that it has sapped her of her humanity and it has perverted her. This strong, intelligent black woman who is a communist has now become a capitalist by the end of this movie. It is something to behold. This it really is. And so my favorite scene is when she is arguing about her shares, her profit shares, and her eyes. She even has bags under her eyes at this point, and she just looks like she's just been run amok and led astray. It is something else to behold that, man. So if you haven't seen Network, it is a fantastic film. Late great Peter Finch won the Academy Award. Beatrice Straight won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress, the shortest time or shortest screen time for somebody to win Best Supporting Actor or Actress at the Academy Award. I think she was on screen for like 5 minutes, 6 minutes, something like that. And her performance was so ripping that she won it. But yeah, so check it out. It's good. All right, moving on. 1977.
I already know what it is.
It gotta be Star Wars, right?
What else came out that year? You know what I'm saying? Like, all right, so seriously, Star Wars is again my favorite of all time. Empire Strikes Back. But anyway, OG Star Wars, my favorite scene in that movie is actually the first scene in the movie because the iconography that George Lucas created with this is legendary. Okay, so opens up, we have space. Then we have the silhouette of a spacecraft. Then we have action. Like, as a kid watching that, every time I see it, it's like, wow. And don't forget the opening when the music smacks you in the face and you get an opening crawl. You know what I'm saying? So just the juxtaposition of bam, and then all of a sudden that the music quiets down and then you have to read what's coming next or what happened beforehand. And just to give you some setup, like there's like a sort of a prologue approach to what it's doing. And that scene right there, you have Vader, you have some plans, you have a princess, and then you have robots, which we later on are called droids. Like, there's so much happens in that first scene that you are just plummeted into the action, which is a very, very much used trope nowadays, where there is no setup. You just get... First action, then you get a lot of exposition, then you get the rest of the story. So that right there, so that even that whole movie format is like George Lucas was really, really good at crafting that. And Yeah, I just love it because you know something is good when you can keep doing it over and over again and don't nobody really be getting but so mad at it. The only Star Wars movie property that does not have the stars, spacecraft, action is Rogue One. Mm-hmm. All the rest of them do. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's just...
Yeah, that opening shot, too, man. Yeah, it's a great... Yeah, because, I mean, there's no exposition. There's no... I mean, you have a title crawl, but...
You don't know what's going on. First time you watch it, like, what does this even mean? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
but no, but like, there's just narratively, though, just the action of having that, the huge Star Destroyer, you know, against the little tiny ships to kind of show that dichotomy of the powerful versus the rebel forces, right? You get it when you see it, like, okay, these people, whoever they are, they have the power. Mm-hmm. You know, and these people who are against them and these smaller ships, they definitely are up against it, right? So this is kind of, you really get that sense. So that's what I like about it. That opening shot, yeah, that's incredible. For me, I don't think it's the best film of 77. I think Star Wars is the best film of 77. I'll give you that. I knew you would pick it, so I was like, let me find something else because I gotta go somewhere else with that. So for me, 77, I'll just go with George Lucas's homeboy, Steven Spielberg, and his film Close Encounters of the Third Kind. If you haven't seen it, it's about some aliens coming to Earth, and that is the close encounter. That's the whole plot. They're gonna have a close encounter with these aliens. But leading up to the alien arrival is the promulgation of visions that these people from all over the world are having. And they're all having the same vision. The vision of this kind of this location, this desertous, mountainous location where this alien craft will descend on the Earth. And my favorite moment, Rashad, is actually my least favorite moment. I'll explain what I'm saying if you haven't seen it. Because what happens is the government of the United States, their approach is to round up all the people in the United States who've had these visions so they can help the government predict where the alien ship is going to land. So they take all these people from across all the 50 states and they bring them to this location out in the desert. They put them in this trailer and not one of these people is black. And so I just think that is hilarious. I just think it really is emblematic. I think it's indicative. I think it is demonstrative of that time of 1977. People thought that racism ended when Dr. King got killed in 68, or when the Civil Rights Act was passed in 64, the Voting Rights Act was passed in 65. Nah, nigga. 77, Rashad. Think about that. You mean to tell me? The United States of America.
Not one black person got a vision.
Not one black person got the invite. Not one of them had the vision. Not one had a vision of the other aliens. All white people.
Aliens ain't like black people either. That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Aliens don't fuck with black people either. Sorry, but I think my mom might listen to this. I didn't mean to say the F word. But so aliens don't like black people either. So I just think that is so funny, man. Whenever I watch that movie, I'm like, yo, not one. And I'm trying to think. I don't think that had any Latinos in there. I don't think there were any Asians. I don't think, yeah, it's just all white folks in that thing, man. It's amazing. It is amazing.
I didn't even know indigenous people. They was here first. None.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Good old white people.
That is hilarious. They're the only ones that get the vision. They're the only ones. Anyway. So that's my 1977 pick.
Go watch it.
Tell me if I'm wrong. go watch Close Encounters. And tell me if I'm wrong. Okay, you go watch it for yourself. All right, 1978.
Superman.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, because the only movie I really remember. And my favorite moment in that movie is, like, I'm gonna be super honest, like, I never was like really, really, you know how people wax poetic about original Superman and Christopher Reeve? It was like, you know, it's the perfect comic movie. Like, I didn't really care about Superman like that. Like, I liked the movie, but the character to me that was the best was Lex Luthor. Gene Hackman play the hell out of this role for no reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, looking at it right, like it's a, like, one, it's a movie about Superman and it's 78. Mm-hmm. He had no reason to go this hard playing Lex Luthor. And when he, in the scene when, like, he summons Superman to him, you know what I'm saying, by that high frequency sound, whatever, X-Mark and the nonsense, either way, he got him to come to him. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's one first. Mm-hmm. Secondly, he hits him with, like, oh, I see, like, you know, I hit you with a machine gun. Oh, whatever. I can't hurt you. Cool. Then I bring out the kryptonite on top of that. Like, yeah, like, fam, like, I don't know who you think I am, but I am him. You know what I'm saying? So, like, he showed him, like, look, I'm going to be goofy sometimes. I'll make these jokes, but I'm not playing no games with you. And I know, and I know who you really are, too. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So, like, that's, like, my favorite scene in that movie. Never mind reversing time and him being a baby lifting up a truck and all that nonsense. Nah, that scene right there, because it showed the audience that, oh, yeah, Superman can be defeated if we try hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that had a great cast, too. Man, that's, like, that's Richard Donner, who did Lethal Weapon, you know?
Yeah.
He directed that, and... You had Gene Hackman in there, Margot Kidder was in there, Ned Beatty was in there, Christopher Reeve. Guess we got top billing in that movie. I think it's Marlon Brando got top billing because he played Jor-El. Exactly. Yeah, but he's Marlon Brando. He's legendary.
And even had to get top billing for Superman 2. I don't think he was even in it.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Because some sort of contractual thing. It's a lot of mess going on behind the scenes of that movie. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But yeah, for me, 78, though, I got to go with the Deer Hunter. To me, that's like Michael Cimino, even though he also was responsible for ruining the New Wave movement in many ways in Hollywood. And he's the guy who, of course, as we all know, directed Heaven's Gate. And that was one of the worst movies of all time. But before he did that, and the studio stepped in and said, oh, heck no, we can't. We ain't going to have y'all auteurs making these films anymore. We're going to step in now, you know, in a big way. But before then, man, he did a film called The Deer Hunter. If you haven't seen it, it's a great movie. And I found out recently that, just like with American Graffiti, I didn't know so many people were critical of The Deer Hunter, man. Like, I didn't know. The critics, some critics liked, some people didn't, but to me, I think it's one of the best movies of all time. But if you haven't seen it, it's a great film about these second generation Russian Americans in a steel town in the Northeast, and they are drafted into Well, they don't draft. They not draft. They enlisted into the Vietnam War, and they were going over there. They thought it was gonna be glory, you know, guns and glory. But when they got over there, they saw that it wasn't like that at all. And it to me, it's one of the great Vietnam War pictures, right up there with Full Metal Jacket and Platoon, and The Thin Red Line. But When you watch The Deer Hunter, the last scene, after everybody's lives have been changed, and Nick, played by Christopher Walken, whose performance was described by critic as a revelation, and I really think it was a revelation. If you haven't seen his performance in that movie, to me, it's top five performances of any actor ever in a film. Go watch that. But after he kills himself at the end, there's this scene when all the remaining characters, the friends who were so joyous before they all went off to Vietnam, and so because there's a wedding scene before the Vietnam scene, and it's a great juxtaposition. But when you watch this last scene, all the remaining characters are there, and they just left the funeral of Nick, and they're all gathered in this little room, and one of the characters who was Nick's well one of the characters who's one of Nick's friends' wife, she says, "Such a great day." And that's basically what it was. It was such a great day. They're mourning one of their closest friends who died, and it's so quiet in the room. It's so dolorous, it's so dour in the room, and they're just sitting there in their black church going clothes, if you will. And it's just, they're just completely sapped, you know? And I think that's a great comment on what death is, and what the pointlessness and heedlessness of the Vietnam War was in itself. And they all start to sing God Bless America. And it's just like, man, this is just one of the most depressing scenes in cinematic history. It has to be. But yeah, anyways, that's my favorite scene in the movie. It's just because it's so harrowing, it's so gripping. And it just kind of it grabs you to remind you of what you just watched in that kind of 2.5 hour span. But yeah, so if you haven't seen Deer Hunter Man, go check it out. It will depress you, it will grab you in a similar way as Schindler's List, or in a similar way as Platoon. But yeah, check it out though. So 1979. Here's the last one, the
79.
last year,
Yes,
the 70s.
a lot of decent movies came out in 79.
Yeah,
Star
for
Trek
sure.
came out, another bomb movie, Moonraker, Mad Max, OG Mad Max, The Warriors, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Caligula, never saw that. But yeah, the one Apocalypse Now, you know what I'm saying? But the one that will always leave an indelible mark on my mind will be Alien. Okay, so story time. I saw Alien when I was like maybe 7 6 7 years old. I remember the day. I remember everything that happened. You know what I'm saying? It was a weird day. It was a Saturday. It was gray outside. We got some fancy new desk. You know, the 80s always had like some random furniture going on. You know what I'm saying? We got this like, it was like foldable seat table thing arrangement. You know what I'm saying? And we watched Aliens 1 and 2 back to back. I don't know why my parents would have allowed that, you know what I'm saying? But we did.
Wow.
And the scene, of course, this classic scene that got me is when they're all on the ship, everybody's chilling, and it's that first person who's like, you know, not feeling too good. Everybody's eating, he's throwing up, and then they lay that man down on that bed.
John Hurt, the late great John Hurt.
Tony, why the thing come out that mess, something like that? That scared the hell out of me, yo.
Oh
I
man.
was so scared. Traumatized. Traumatized, I tell you, Tony. Yo, like that scene right there. After that, I was like, yo, I don't want to watch no more of this. We can do. We sojourn our way on to the end of both of those movies.
Man, look, when I saw Alien, I'm gonna cut your wisdom, God. When I saw Alien, that was the movie that really I had to sleep with my mom after that. Not like that. No, but I know, but in all seriousness, I had to sleep in the same bed as my mother, bro.
Yo, that
Like
show was
I had to
so
sleep. I
scary,
had
yo.
no, I had to, man. Like it was like that was the movie for me. That's the one that gave me nightmares. I had to I honestly had to yeah, I was like, Mom, 'cause I was over my cousin's house, man. I don't know what older cousins, man. Like they don't care about us,
Yeah,
man. Like
nah, not
they
at
had
all,
me.
yo.
Yeah, I had no, because I remember my older cousins had me watching Boys in the Hood. And I was like, bro, I was like 6 years old watching that. Like, why am I watching this, bro? Like, this is crazy. I like the first scene I saw too was a scene when Ricky got shot. I'm like, nigga, I'm too old. I'm too young to be watching this. This is crazy. But yeah, that was the movie that did it for me, man. I honestly I had nightmares about Alien for years, bro. For years.
And
After that.
yeah, me too. Like, I got like, it was so crazy. I don't even know why your mind take you to this place, but like, in my house. I got like back in my, let's say my grandparents, it has older house, but it was built onto. So at one point from like the front to the kitchen, you know what I'm saying, was added on. Because if you look at it from where it used to be, it used to be like a side porch because the floor angled downwards for the rain to go down. And then the kitchen was built on. And there was like a door, kitchen door, hallway door, front. And I would literally run. And so, oh yeah, go in the kitchen, get something. I would run every time thinking someone's going to be in the kitchen because it'd be dark back there. I would run from the kitchen to the front for like, nigga, like 2-3 years after I saw it. Like, just after a while, I was like, yo, why am I doing this? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, but yeah, like, for the longest, yo, I would be running to the front thinking someone's aliens going to come and get me in the kitchen.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm not ashamed to say that.
No, like, no, I mean,
yo, like,
no, speak your truth, man. No, because that had me sleeping in the bed with my mom. And my mom got tired of me, and she told me go sleep with your sister. And I had to, man. It was just, man. Yeah, that's the one, man. That's the one. But I mean, when you go back as you know, when you mature and you watch it, man, it's like, it's just some brilliant filmmaking, though. Like, good Lord, man.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
yeah, like the practicality of it, and just the like the set design and how realistic they made this world to be. It's it's amazing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And for them to fumble the bag so bad with how they're doing the franchise now, it's like, bro, like.
Yeah, man.
I haven't seen Prey yet, but I heard a lot of good things about it. You know, but we'll see. Even though that's not Predator, that's them Predator, but still, they crossed somewhere paths.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they really did. That was ridiculous. but nah, man. Yeah, Alien 1, Alien 2 was great too. Man, James Cameron film, that was a good one too. Aliens was great. For me, 79 is Kramer versus Kramer. You haven't seen it. It's about divorce. It's one of the first films to tackle the sticky subject that was once taboo about divorce.
Divorce.
And today, it's so commonplace now because it seems like everybody getting divorced. Except you, Rashad. Rashad, ladies and gentlemen, married for 50 years. That's great. But no, I Kramer versus Kramer, man. It's Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep. You already know off top. That's gonna be some great acting performance right there.
Definitely.
Great film. Shorter film too, not very long. But that's basically the plot. Is you have man, woman. They're married. They have a son together, little son. And the woman, she's getting tired of it. She's not feeling it anymore, and she leaves. And Dustin Hoffman is basically left to raise his young son by himself. Meryl Streep leaves him, and he's an architect, a very successful architect, and he has to juggle being a single father for the first time in his life. And that's basically the plot. But my favorite moment of the film is we see Billy, his son. He wants his mom. He's the mama's boy at the beginning of the film. But when Meryl Streep just ups and leaves without warning, he endears himself. Or I should say Dustin Hoffman, the father figure, or the father character, endears himself to his son. And they bond, you know, they bond with each other. And there's this scene when Meryl Streep comes back into her young son's life after they've been through litigation and gone to court, divorce court and so forth and so on. The way that she comes back into his life, the way that Dustin Hoffman, you see him let Billy go as he runs in the park to meet his mother, and Meryl Streep picks him up, you know, and hugs him. But it's something about that scene, about how here these two people This grown man, this little person, his little son have built a life together, you know. But he lets him go in that moment to kind of meet this woman who's estranged from him. It's a poignant scene. I think it just really speaks to kind of security, the kind of I would say confidence in one's own love for a family member, that you're not threatened by this other person who really did him wrong, because you know that nothing can change how you feel about each other, you know. But anyway, it's a good scene, man. It's a great movie if you haven't seen it. Long story short, I won't give the ending away, but yeah, there's some really great court scenes in that movie too, man. The legal court scenes are really good. The lawyer character is very good. But yeah, check it out. Kramer versus
Kramer versus
Kramer,
Kramer.
1979. Yeah,
Cool.
man.
And
But yeah, that's it, man. I think we made it through. I can't believe it.
we did. We're like a minute to spare. We did a good job. Yeah,
Yeah.
man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job.
This was fun. No, I had, yeah. This was
this made me stretch
different.
a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like I'll give it
Yeah.
to you. It's good sending off of season one of this. You know what I'm saying? So it's been an honor and a pleasure
But no,
doing
we
this
got one
with
more
you.
episode left though,
We
Rashawn.
do? Oh, my
Yeah,
bad. We
no.
do?
This is the last my favorite moment, but
Oh yeah, we got
I got
another.
one more. I got one
Oh, you
more.
got one more in you?
Yeah, I got one more.
Cool. All right, well,
We're gonna do one more. Maybe with, I don't know, Rashad. Man, I'm not, now you got me thinking. I'm gonna do one more or not. I think yeah, I'm gonna do one more. We'll do one more, everybody.
gotcha.
And
All right.
we'll come back, we'll reconvene. This is great, man. Let me repeat that. This is great, man. My favorite moment. The last one, baby. We, you know, it's great. We're here. You know what I'm saying? Oh, before we leave, last 1 minute. Rest in peace to my barber, Kendall.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, man, he died, man. So rest in peace to him.